Hello, True Stories of Good People listeners, and happy 2021! Y'all, we did it. We made it through 2020. And if there's one thing that kept me going, it was having all of these inspiring conversations with our podcast guests who are doing such amazing things in the world. They honestly and truly make me want to be a better person and give me just so much hope for the future. If you've enjoyed any of our episodes, we would be so grateful if you would consider leaving us a 5-star rating and review in the Apple Podcast Store. It helps other people find our podcast, which means that these stories of kindness will spread even further. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Hello, and welcome to another episode of True Stories of Good People, a GoFundMe Heroes production. I am your host, Kelsey Little. In each episode of this podcast, we sit down with someone who's making a difference in other people's lives, or who has had their life changed by someone kind. Here at GoFundMe, we believe that the simple act of giving makes a profound difference in the world and can fuel movements, big or small. And today's story is a beautiful example of that. Deon Dawson is a fighter in more ways than one. As a veteran, he served in the Navy as an award-winning member of his department's communications division. As a civilian, Deon is the founder and leader of Deon's Chicago Dream, a nonprofit that provides material resources, community connection, and thousands of pounds of fresh food and counting to residents in his lifelong neighborhood of Englewood. Hello, True Stories of Good People listeners. I'm very excited to be here today chatting with Deon Dawson. Deon, thank you so much for being here.
Likewise. Phil, it's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So first of all, Deon, you live in Chicago, is that right?
That is correct. Chicago, Illinois, South Side.
How long have you lived in Chicago?
My whole life, except for when I was in the military.
Okay, born and raised. I love it. Yes. I freaking love Chicago. What is your favorite thing about living there?
Oh, man. It has to be the food. It has to be, definitely. So, I mean, any type of food that you would want is such a big place. You can get everything. So, and I'm a foodie as well. So, yeah, definitely the food.
Same. I know there's like just endless debates in Chicago about the whole deep dish question. Like, where's your place that you go?
Oh, man. So it's
controversial, I know.
Yeah, because it's like you do have Giordano's, you do have Lou Malnati's. I mean, if I had to pick between the two, I would probably say Deon in, you know, pre and post COVID, it would be Lou Malnati's, but prior to, it would have been Giordano's.
So. Okay, cool. I like a little bit of both. I like it. Yeah. And then so tell us a little bit more about yourself, like aside from your amazing nonprofit, which we'll talk all about, like what fills your days? Any fun hobbies or interests aside from that stuff?
Oh man, that's my hobby. That's the fun stuff.
Yeah.
I'm 100%, you know, all in, everything, going hard. So, you know, besides that, I really don't do anything, honestly, because it's so, you know, it satisfies a lot of different areas of my life. So, you know, it's not just, oh, I'm doing this one thing on the internet or I'm doing this thing physically and let me have a release on the internet. It's kind of a nice meeting of the worlds where everything is kind of cool. So besides that, literally just, you know, trying to get some more energy to hang out with my wife, my son, my dog, and then just back at it every day.
Oh, I love that. Well, so yeah, let's just dive into your amazing story then. So to start off, Deon, I think you mentioned as well, you're a Navy veteran. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
And you were a mass communication specialist?
Yes, that's correct. Yep.
I don't exactly know what that is. So I'd love to hear like about what that job entails.
Got you. A mass communication specialist is pretty much the public affairs and media Swiss Army knife. So we actually go to school after basic training. We go to Fort Meade, Maryland, and we go to to the Defense Information School, where we're put through like a rigorous course to learn the basic fundamentals of a lot of different trades and a lot of different industries. So we learned the basics of journalism, photojournalism, print shop, web design, videography, public relations. And then after we're out in the fleet, depending upon what duty station we're at, we, you know, we hone those skills to that situation. And so, you know, a lot of times when you go in a federal building and, you know, you see the chain of command of the president and the vice president, there's a high, a very high chance that a mass communication specialist took that photo in a photo studio. If, you know, the Pentagon needs video or audio from something that happened while we're out to sea and stuff like that, we transmit that to them. My trade was journalism. And when I left the Navy, I was one of the highest rated journalists, won a Navy and a DOD-wide journalism award. So, you know, that was the thing that kind of I, you know, tipped my hat to, and I kind of had my pride in. But that was the thing that I really, really loved is writing and public relations.
That is so fascinating. That must have been like a really interesting job.
Oh, definitely. The funny thing is when I went into the Navy recruiter's office, I said, I don't care what I do as long as I get to talk. and nobody had come out of that office with my job and got shipped off. And so they was like, oh, wow. So, you know, after people meet me and then they hear about what my job was, it made perfect sense.
Yeah. I love that. So when you returned home, you know, as I've read, you really had this desire to continue serving the public, and you kind of pivoted to wanting to specifically help your immediate community in Chicago. So when was that, first of all, and what was kind of your thought process around that time?
So I got out of the Navy in 2015, and I was going through the normal route of, you know, getting out, you know, getting a job or, you know, doing communications and a lot of different things. And I'm not a normal route guy. You know what I mean? And here I am with, you know, six, seven years of communications, public relations experience, governmental communication experience. And, you know, I felt as if, because there's this veil that you have to peek behind to understand our job, it wasn't valued. You know what I mean? And so I always helped my community. When I got back, I taught journalism at True Star magazine for a bit. And there I would, you know, do GoFundMes, you know, coincidentally for my students.
Oh, wow.
And stuff like that. And for me, that was the stuff that felt good. And I knew that when I got back, I wanted to help my community, because when I was deployed, I was standing on a flight deck in the middle of the Red Sea. It's about 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And I look around in this complete darkness. And my first thought, you know, of course, after panicking, you know what I mean? You kind of feel like you don't exist, you know, in that moment. But I immediately went to what's going on at home in Inglewood. And that was my moment that I realized, okay, whatever it is, it has to be centered around my community. And a lot of people don't know about, you know, about me is that, you know, when I got back, I suffered from, you know, PTSD, transitioning, you know, being married and not understanding what it was, you know, not really having employment lined up. You know, I had my one, the one thing that was dear to me from the military. After I deployed, I had a Corvette, and, you know, getting back and getting to a point where I was sleeping in my Corvette, me and my wife were separated. I didn't really, you know, I didn't really understand what was going on. And so I had to sell my Corvette just to survive. And, you know, I had to pick these pieces back up. And then when I, you know, realized that this was my bottom, you know, I found another bottom, and that was finding out that my mom had kidney cancer. And so at that moment, you truly, truly understand how far you've fallen from where you were. and you really find your bearings, and you really, you know, have to dig deep to try to understand life at a different level. And so, you know, after that moment, and after 3 days of staying in a room and not coming out, I decided to put my life back together and decided to do what I wanted to do with my life. And so, you know, got with my wife, and we figured out who we were, you know, because that's the thing, we're always gone as military members, figured out who we were as people. And, you know, we've been able to just really, really transcend, you know, what we thought and who we thought we were. And, you know, my mom beat kidney cancer. And, you know, to this day, I credit those pivotal moments for allowing me to know, you know, what real adversity was. And so, you know, fast forward to, you know, earlier this year, right when COVID hit, I started working overnight at Amazon, you know what I mean, to help family members pay bills and help people that I know pay bills. And then right as Juneteenth started coming up, I said, okay, you know, there's this big, you know, celebration around actually recognizing Juneteenth this year. What am I going to do to say that I did my part? And so I started a GoFundMe, you know, and yeah. I raised $2,500 in 2 days.
And, wow.
I went hard, you know what I mean? Like, you, like a lot of people don't know is that, you know, we all have the same power. You know, we just don't, you know, always enact it in the same way. So for me, you know, I did post that status and I did share it, like GoFundMe told me to. But you know what else I did? Anytime somebody updated their status, bow right there in their comment section.
Nice.
Know? Yep. Anytime, you know, any of my friends, you know, commented on something funny I said, I laughed back and said, hey, but you can't donate to my GoFundMe. And so, you know, we were able to do that, and we turned around, and on the 3rd of July was the first day I really, like, felt alive. And we were able to feed over 90 families, and it was the first time I just felt like me. Like, I really felt it. And after that moment, you know, a lot of people don't know that I was approached with a funding opportunity, and I couldn't take it because I wasn't a nonprofit or anything like that. I just did it. And I knew that that was my fork in the road. I knew that, okay, you can't take this, but what can you do now? And I told myself, I said, I will never, ever put myself in a position again to not be able to help somebody. And so after that, I sat in my bed, and please, if I'm talking too much of it, let me know. Okay.
No worries. Well, so I definitely want to get into, like, how this nonprofit came to be, but just in case our listeners, like, don't have, like, the genesis, like, context of it. So you came back from being in the military, and you had all these, you know, transformative experiences, and, this led you to create this project that you titled Dion Chicago Dream, which later became a nonprofit. But just to kind of, like, get into why you chose to focus on these specific topics. So I think the mission of Dion Chicago Dream is to tackle food insecurity and hunger in your community. So I'd love to hear, like, the backstory of why you decided to focus on those things specifically. And you talk also a lot about how Englewood is a food desert, and just kind of the concept of what that is and what that means for the people in your community.
So in Englewood, there's pretty much no supermarkets. We have Whole Foods, you know what I mean? But it doesn't really connect to the core demographic of the area. And we don't have healthy options. And that's, not only is it a problem, but for me, I try to be solution-based, you know what I mean? Because there are going to be some problems that are way deep, you know, deeply rooted in a lot of different areas. But, you know, for Englewood to be a food desert, number one, that was something that I don't like, I'll never like. And then I know Englewood. You know, my mom, she struggled through substance abuse for 20 years, for a long time. I don't know the exact year, you know what I mean? But it was a long time. You know, we've been evicted from places, things like that. And I know Inglewood. I like the store that the fridge is actually outside of now was a store that, you know, we would go to every day. You know what I mean? And for me, it's a little different because did I see drug transactions as a kid? Yes. You know, did I see, you know, gangbangers outside? Yes. But it didn't, that didn't make up my childhood. You know what I mean? And I was able to look past it. And so, you know, when it comes to Inglewood, which has, you know, the annual household income is, you know, $12,000. And, you know, the unemployment rate is almost 10 to 15% higher than the city average. It paints this grim picture. You know what I mean? And then when you have violence, you know, and then after all of that, you have COVID, you know what I mean? And so it's this neighborhood is something that made me who I was. And if that environment can create me, then I would want that environment, you know, although slightly better, to create somebody else like me, because I always thought about if there was other kids like me who, you know, were able to break through, you know, and not run, you know what I mean? Because that's what a lot of people do. They break through and they run. And I didn't want to do that. And so Inglewood is just, you know, something that's some place that's extremely dear to my heart. And it has helped me in every stage of my life. And it's allowed me to adjust faster than average person when it comes to adversity or problems.
Thank you so much for sharing that background. And then, so you mentioned the community fridge, which is a big part of your nonprofit and Dion Chicago Dream. So you started that as a way to give away free food. And I would love to hear like how that idea came to be, like when you started that. And I know for the first few months you were funding it from your own pocket, which is pretty amazing. So yeah, just how did that all come to be?
So, you know, the biggest thing when it comes to nonprofit work that I want to directly go against is the lack of transparency and the ability for a nonprofit to mimic the neighborhood. You know what I mean? And so I saw that there was a void when it came to institutions. Every area in the United States, you know, has nonprofits that are registered nearby and things like that. But if you look at how COVID has ravaged the neighborhoods and ravaged the plan that they had in case there was an emergency, we see that in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, there has not been a dearth of new institutions. And so that's what Dion Chicago Dream is. Dion Chicago Dream is our answer to the ever-changing question of what's wrong. That question will never have a simple answer. And so with Project Dream Fridge, I was looking on Instagram one day looking for an idea that can be our thing. And so what it ended up being is that it is our thing that allows us to be out there every day. And that is what I wanted. I wanted something that can generate both quantitative and qualitative data so that we can start to write our own narrative. Because the way that everything is set up, if you don't have data, then, you know, you're almost dismissed. But you're using other people's data for a general term. No, we're going to use our own data and we're going to do it. And we're going to be out there so that the residents can see us, so we can have these loving interactions and relationships, so that sometimes when words can't suffice, we'll have a moment to go off of. And so I'm on Instagram one night and I see, you know, community fridges have taken off in Cali and New York. And I turn to my wife and I said, this is it. And I looked on her face and I said, we're doing this now. And I'll never forget, I told her this. I want to say it was around like the 29th of August. And we launched on the 11th of September.
Wow.
And the difference was that we don't allow the community to rely on the community to fill it, because the community is already struggling.
Yeah.
Some of the most basic problems sometimes require the most basic solution. But I felt that when I looked around, nothing really mimicked what I could bring to the table. You know what I mean? Where we take the hard work and consistency of this technological generation, but we take the hard work and the strong work ethic from the past, and we merge it into this beautiful thing that has transparency and accountability. And so we started it on the September 11th, where we just offer free fruits, vegetables, and water, and it's every day. And wow. I can say, you know, based on my data, because I'm out there every day, that to this day we provided more than 4,300 pounds of fresh fruits, vegetables, and water since September 11th, over 2,700 serving amounts. And you know, for me, I knew that this thing, I knew what it could be. And so every day I just keep grinding and I show it, because I didn't want the conversation to be about, well, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Because we have all of this technology, and we have people on social media and on all these different platforms for 7-8 hours of screen time. But then when it comes to their craft and their passion, none of it was documented. You know what I mean? And so for me, I wanted to legalize this thing. And, you know, we in the last month, we've officially, you know, we're officially our own 501c3 organization.
Congratulations.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. So tell me about the funding opportunity that came along that allowed you to kind of like expand this.
Yeah. So, well, no, we basically, every day was out of my pocket. And then, you know, I applied for a special grant and, you know, received it from the Field Foundation here in Chicago. But for me, it's not just about money. You know what I mean? What people learn about me when they meet me is that I'm not going to allow this to fail. I'll go back to Amazon. I'll work at Walmart. You know, I'll do whatever I have to so that every day, the looks on their faces used to be, I hope this is open. And now it's, I expect you to be here. And so when I hear things like, hey, man, you 5 minutes late today. And someone like, I love it, because now the community has accepted it. And so we're creating these relationships. And, you know, just like I alluded to earlier, you know, the Dream Team is a movement, and I'm throwing Hail Marys. You know what I mean? I'm reaching out, and I want every brand and every, you know, organization to interact with this, because when you interact with it, it's going to stay with you. And it's not about me. This moment and this movement is bigger than me. It's just about changing the tide of what we can do with philanthropy and owning our story. And so for me, you know, that's what it's important. That's why it is important to me, because everything about where we're headed, we get to curate our story. And that, and when you can, and you know that from, you know, having your own media division, that when you get to curate that story, you get to paint the picture that you want people to see. You can live with the results because you controlled, you know, what it is they're looking at. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, so I love all of that. And I like the way you break it down into quantitative and qualitative data, because those are both very important. So like the 4,300 pounds of food is like crazy impressive. And then I'm wondering on the other side of things, like, have you had any particularly touching or memorable conversations with the people who come to the community fridge that kind of stick out in your memory?
Of course.
I'd love to hear some.
If today, you know, if people look on there today, one of the visitors read, said something that I posted. And that's the key, is that I can't be the person that tells everybody's story. And so what I'm doing is I'm going to bring them to you. You know what I mean? One story, you know, that if you look on our page from a week or two ago, a guy, Ronaldo, he was coming in flip flops. You know what I mean? Every day. And it's, you know, 25 degrees in Chicago. Wow. He has on flip-flops, no jacket. And you know, I told him, I said, hey, I'm going to bring you some. And then, you know, I showed up to his house, me and my mom, and, you know, we gave him some boots and a jacket. And just that experience, it is what it's about for me, because I've had days where I wish I would have got a knock at the door. I've been on a bus stop in 12 inches of snow, hoping somebody I knew would ride past, and they never did. And so every day is an opportunity to not only create these interactions, but they're already there. And so for me, it's my job to document it so that in case I'm not telling it right, sometimes people can pick up on their own nonverbal cues from looking at this video, looking into the eyes of this man or woman or even a kid, and seeing how we've been allowed to set ourselves apart by keeping the people first, because that's our motto. Our motto is feed the people, love the people, remind the people that it's about the people. Because, you know, if we get lost in everything but the people, then it'll be very easy to not be focused on the mission. And so that's why every 2-3 videos I post, you know, I make sure that you're getting it from their words and not mine.
I love that so much. And those videos are on your Instagram?
Everywhere. Yep.
Everywhere.
Instagram,
yeah.
Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, everywhere.
Awesome. And you mentioned your mom, which I was going to ask about as well. So I did not know before this interview that she beat kidney cancer. So that's amazing. And I know she's been like one of your main volunteers, like right by your side throughout this entire project. Yeah. Has it been, I would imagine, pretty special to be able to do this with your mom?
It's been everything. I've done a lot of stuff that has that's made her proud, but for me, she didn't have a chance to have a lot of happy moments. And so, you know, that's I try to keep her close, because I just love trying to make her smile, because there's been so many dark days for her. I'm trying not to cry. And so that, like, having her here and, you know, doing an interview and it airing at 1 a.m. and she works at midnight or something like that, or, you know, her calling me and just telling me that, you know, hey, you know, you did good. You know what I mean? Like, that means the world to me.
Oh, that's beautiful. And you have a whole other team of volunteers as well. So this is growing. I was looking on the website and it looks like a stellar group of people.
The dream team. You're part of it.
Tell us about some of your awesome team members.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now we can't fully mobilize our volunteer base because of COVID. And so, you know, I try to keep everybody at arm's length, or, you know, just standby mode, because, you know, we want to keep everybody safe. But besides my mom, I have my vice president, Natalie, who's, you know, our director of operations, who's, you know, like my right hand when it comes to us, you know, figuring out how we're going to, you know, that next thing we're going to do. And, you know, her being the yin to my yang allows us to kind of cover a lot of ground. She's more introverted, but, you know, been invaluable and you know, helping this whole thing just kind of come to fruition. We have our funding director, Roseanne, who's a whiz with just, you know, creating the opportunities and the relationship, because that's what the dream team is about. You know, the dream team is about, it's like Beyonce's beehive. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's a badge of honor. It's something that we all can be proud of, and we all play a part in it. And so, you know, I tell everybody, hey man, I told you I could help you. And I'm like, it's okay. Because I, you know, like that's what the ultimate goal is, for everybody to help. But right now I need everybody to stay safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody from here in Chicago to around the world, you know what I mean? Like, everybody's a dream team member. That's the thing. And anybody can call me. And if they need to pick me up, you know, the number's on the website and on my social media platforms, give me a call, video call me, because I, you know, it's that accessibility allows us to really just be us, you know what I mean? And it's okay, you know, for how other people do business, but it's for us, no, you can call me. Because sometimes you just need to smile, sometimes you need to feel heard. And I know what it feels like to not be heard. And so, you know, I don't ever want anybody to feel like I'm too far where I can't reach them. So, you know, that's what this dream team is about.
I love that so much. So you just recently launched another GoFundMe campaign for a very cool expansion of your current efforts. So tell us about the Dream Center of Englewood.
Dream Center of Englewood is our next step of evolution. When it comes to the future of philanthropy, when it comes to the future post COVID, the first domino that needs to fall is for us to have ownership of our dream. And for me, I started this GoFundMe, and it's funny because a lot of people scoffed at the idea of me starting a $500,000 GoFundMe. And you know, to me, I was like, pish posh, I don't care. And the Dream Center is our safety zone. It's our safe space. Englewood has been ravaged with violence and with COVID, and a lot of people don't know that every day that I've opened and closed the fridge, my son has been with me. And so, you know, there have been a lot of sticky situations, and you know, I told myself, I said, we're going to get through the winter time so that we can open up the Dream Center. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Yeah. And, you know, I want to continue to have my son with me, but also have the environment be safe and be protected. And then when it comes to the inside of the Dream Center, it is something that has adapted to what today is. And so we see all of these big companies trying to create these hubs, but they own the hub. You know what I mean? So you're still, you know, well, if my nonprofit is paying $1,500 in rent and we only brought in $2,000, I just spent all of our money surviving and not assisting people. And so, you know, us having this place, when you walk into the Dream Center of Englewood, our lobby is going to be a produce section like a grocery store.
Nice.
And so, you know, it's going to go from us having the dream fridge to inside the Dream Center having this produce section. And instead of people paying, we're going to weigh it so that, you know, each person can come every day, 5 to 7 pounds, you know, of fruits and vegetables, and they can survive to tomorrow. And that's what it's about. But also, not just that, but setting ourselves up to really, really aid our community. So we'll have two fully stocked offices so that any, you know, nonprofit or for-profit Englewood business who can't own or afford a working office, they can come rent it out for, you know, a couple hours or something at a reasonable rate.
Yeah.
We're not trying to get rich off them. We want them to be the best that they can be. Besides the fully stocked offices, having a little section of work pods, because maybe you just want that energy or you need that feeling around you to spark that creativity. Having a fully stocked photo studio so that budding photographers in the neighborhood can build their portfolio so they can get used to handling expensive equipment and knowing the length of the lens that they might need for whatever photo they're trying to take. You know what I mean? We're walking around with the $1,100 iPhone that can be your camera. You know what I mean? Not only that, but having the space to take on food shipments and storing food and somebody coming up and saying, hey, well, can I get something just for tonight? Me and my family are hungry. Being that pillar, you know what I mean? Having the ability to be planted and grow with the community. And because we don't have situations where we own everything involved, we're just steady doing whatever we can to survive. And that's what's not it's about. And so that's why for me, you know, the military taught me how to take a loss fast and pivot before somebody else. Wow. And so for me, you know, since we don't, if we own the Dream Center, in my mind, automatically day one, we're bringing in $800 to $1,200 in income a week because I'm going to be working overnight. I don't care. And so that's what the Dream Center is. And that's the next step in our progression so that then everything that comes in, we can just disseminate it in this beautiful way and always progress, grow, and adapt, not only with the community, but with the times and with technology, because there's a lot of stuff that Inglewood is going without, but it's up to us, the change makers, to fully believe in ourselves. And that's what the Dream Center of Inglewood is.
Oh my gosh, that is so, that's like so much more expansive than even I was thinking, and such like a beautiful genesis of your life and experience and passions. Okay, well, you said you're going to be like working all night, which I have no doubt about that day it opens, but take a step back for a second and just imagine with me. So like, it's the first day that you're open and you're like standing outside.
I have on a pink express suit because I bought it already.
That's okay. I love that. So you're wearing your pink express suit and you're standing, you're looking at the Dream Center and you're like just about to open and welcome your first guests. Like, how are you feeling?
I'm crying. Definitely. I'm trying not to cry right now. So, that's just what it's about. It's about, having this big, beautiful thing and just kind of showing everybody, you know, because when we talk about dreams, I use dream because it's like love. It's one of the few things that's like love. That's not, you can't really formulate it for everybody, but everybody knows what it means. And we limit dreaming to children as if our dream is realized already. And there's some people who haven't tapped their potential and they're 30 and they're 40 and 50 and 60. And I want them to feel it. You know what I mean? And that's why I'm out there every day, because I want them to know that, you know, if you give, you really, really give something your all. And that's just all I'm doing. I'm just going for broke every day, like every play. Like I was always the home run guy. I never was the everyday, you know, so I can be on the Mount Rushmore guy. And that's the difference. And so, you know, I never really understood what 100 was until this. And this is just me going every single day at 100%. And that day is just, you know, a culmination of the days I starved, my mom, being in the Navy and wondering if I mattered. It's just, you know, every single thing. And it's just allowed me to open those doors and to have them, you know, walk into another world that they didn't think was possible.
I have the chills. I can't wait to keep following along and see that, you know, virtually that day, and then hopefully visit in person someday. I would, definitely. That would be an honor.
Definitely.
Well, Dion, I just want to take a moment to say thank you so much for chatting with me, first of all, but also thank you so much for like putting so much of yourself into the world and into other people. It's just, it's really beautiful and it's really inspiring. And I'm just very, very glad to know you. So thank you for everything that you do.
Likewise. I appreciate you. Thank you for everything that you guys are doing, because there's a lot of people that don't feel heard. So, you know, you guys are definitely vital to the ecosystem. And so, you know, we appreciate it. And, you know, my goal is to just make sure that, you know, I make you guys look as good as I can and show them that, you know, you guys were a part of us getting the Dream Center of Inglewood built.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I would love to ask you one last question as kind of a closing thought. So, you know, in general, but especially in this time when we're facing a pandemic and it's kind of just everyone is struggling, you know, a little bit more than usual. Why is it so important for us to, you know, be there for one another and spread kindness in our communities?
Because I'm doing this because it's necessary for the overall balance of our universe. That's there. Everything and everybody is like we're vital to our overall ecosystem. And so, you know, it's up to us as good people, as change makers, as doers of good, to show people that you can be happy being a good person. It's up to us to show people that you can be successful, that you can feel pretty, that you can dress amazing and still be somebody that's for your community and for the betterment of everybody. And so, you know, I do this because I just want people to have a certain totality when it comes to unconditional love. It's not unconditional love is not in a relationship. It should be for everybody. Will you have moments when you're upset? Yeah. But, you know, the bad people have won long enough. It's time for us to show people that being a good person can get you somewhere. Because we've had bad people buy property in Inglewood and misuse it and use it for nefarious situations. And so, you know, I'm only standing on what I know I need to make sure that we survive not only COVID, but that we can actually look toward the future, see how we can be of assistance, and then just enjoy the ride.
Thank you so much to Dion for being on our podcast today. You can support his mission at gofundme.com/heroes. Thank you so much for listening to True Stories of Good People. Asking for help is liberating and powerful, and we hope that these stories inspire a sense of hopefulness that, at the end of the day, people want to help each other. If you are inspired by today's story, please help us out by heading over to iTunes and leaving us a rating or review and subscribing to the show. And if anyone you know loves inspiring stories, please share our podcast with them. It means the world to us. For more inspiring stories, just like the one you heard today, please visit the GoFundMe Heroes Hub at gofundme.com/heroes and be sure to subscribe to our mailing list so you can get heartwarming stories delivered straight to your inbox. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at GoFundMe Heroes. Also, we love to hear from listeners, so if you have any feedback, suggestions, or questions, you can write to us at podcast@gofundme.com. Special thanks to Gotham Podcast Studio, where this episode was remotely recorded, and to our editing team at Cloud Studios in Seattle, Washington. We'll be back next time with more True Stories of Good People. Talk to you then!